It's The Current's Music News, the now weekly podcast where we tell you what you need to know about what's going on in the music world. Today's Thursday, May 2nd. I'm Jay Gabler. We're going to be trying some new features in this new podcast format, so let us know what you think. We're going to get to the headlines shortly, and we'll talk about some of this week's new releases, and I talk with music legend Alan Parsons. But first, let's talk about what happened this week in music history. 16 years ago, this past Sunday, the iTunes store opened. When the store went live for music purchases on April 28th, 2003, it was the only legal place on the internet to buy music from all five major labels. And until 2007, all songs were the same price, 99 cents. By 2010, iTunes was the biggest music vendor in the world. Paid downloads have now largely been replaced by streaming, but the store has sold over 35 billion songs worldwide. 40 years ago this week, Elton John became one of the first Western rock stars to play in Israel. That fact's been cited in recent years as John's return to play shows there despite a boycott campaign, but at the time, the Rocketman's Middle Eastern tour was overshadowed by his subsequent shows in the Soviet Union. John's successful visit was seen as a hopeful sign that the Cold War might finally be thawing. 34 years ago this Saturday, the Apollo Theater reopened after an extensive renovation that gave new life to a historic venue that had fallen into disuse and disrepair. 60 entertainers performed at the nationally televised reopening show. Bill Cosby emceed the Motown-themed show, and there was music from legends including James Brown, Cab Calloway, Sarah Vaughan, Stevie Wonder, and Little Richard. The very first act to hit the stage that night in 1985, though, was the hottest Motown pop star of the moment, El DeBarge, who sang Rhythm of the Night. Okay, let's talk about this week's news headlines. Since our last episode, you may have heard that Woodstock 50 was off. Then you may have heard that it's actually still happening. Then you may have heard that no, it's definitely not still happening. What the heck is going on with this festival? Basically, what happened is that the festival's financial backer, Dentsu Aegis Network, announced that it's pulling out, and so therefore the festival is off. They cited production delays and a reduction in capacity from 100,000 to 75,000 attendees, which of course means that much less profit. The festival's promoter, Michael Lang, co-founder of the original Woodstock Festival, insists that just because the money's gone, that doesn't mean the festival isn't going to happen. He told the New York Times, "We need to replace them financially. Frankly, I think it'll be a much easier process going forward because all that baggage gets left behind. We're a few days away from permits. We are in talks with investors who are anxious to come in." The tumultuous process is, of course, in sparing comparisons to the infamously disastrous Fyre Festival, but even the most epic visions of that event were small potatoes compared to what's planned for Woodstock. The already announced lineup is full of massive stars like Jay-Z, Miley Cyrus, and of course, returning Woodstock performers like Santana. Lang's attorney is telling everyone, including the artists, to proceed as planned, but the Black Keys have already pulled out. Even as the sharks circle, Lang swears he's unconcerned. Funnily enough, he says, "This kind of fits the legacy of Woodstock in a way. In 1969, we got kicked out of Wallkill a month before the festival was to happen. One of the miracles was that we found a site the next day." Sounds like he'll need an even bigger miracle this time. Remember how long Amazon lost money before it started to make all the money? So does Daniel Ek, head of Spotify. The streaming service reached a landmark this week, hitting 100 million paying users worldwide. And in the first 3 months of the year, it lost over $100 million. Its biggest rival in the ongoing battle for streaming supremacy is Apple Music, which is up to 50 million paying subscribers. With the US and Europe largely saturated, the giants are competing for earbuds in new markets like India. Spotify is also watching companies like Netflix, which, as you may have noticed if you're a fan of shows like Stranger Things and Orange is the New Black, has figured out there's more money in original content than in stuff made by other people. For Spotify, that means podcasts. but they're not paying off for the company yet. Top artist, top male artist, top Billboard 200 artist, top Hot 100 artist, top streaming songs artist, top song sales artist, top radio songs artist, top rap male artist. At the 2019 Billboard Music Awards on Tuesday night, they all turned out to be the same guy, and his name is Drake. Some other artists also picked up trophies. Juice WRLD for Best New Artist, Ariana Grande for Best Female Artist. But who watches awards shows for awards anyway? It's all about the big production numbers and the viral moments. Taylor Swift and Brandon Urie brought out a pink marching band for their new single, Me. More on that song later. Halsey joined BTS for Boy With Love, and Mariah Carey accepted the Billboard Icon Award by performing a medley of hits that, as presenter Jennifer Hudson was quick to point out, Carey wrote herself. And then those viral moments. The biggest surprise guest was MC Scat Cat, who showed up to duet with Paula Abdul as she closed the show with Opposites Attract and other hits. When Drake accepted his award for Top Billboard 200 Album, I know, I didn't even mention that one, he gave a shout out to the hero we've all been talking about this week.
Shout out to Arya Stark for putting in that work last week. Hey.
Okay, let's talk about some of this week's new releases. First, we've got to talk about L7, who are out with their first new album in 20 years. The LA foursome are Riot Girl royalty, and they still have something to say. One of their comeback singles was titled, I Came Back to Bitch. After a couple years of successful shows, the band are dropping their seventh studio album and heading out on a national tour that will very possibly be shattering a town near you over the next several weeks. Here's Stadium West, a loud and proud single from Scatter the Rats. We also have to talk about Vampire Weekend, although it seems we've been talking for literally years about their new album, Father of the Bride. The quintessential prep pop band's fourth album, A Double, is also their first without multi-instrumentalist Rostam, but bandleader Ezra Koenig hasn't lost the ability to make fans swoon with tunes that keep your toes tapping and your ears guessing, with adventurous textures underlying his accessible melodies. Here's This Life, which samples I Love McConan and features guest vocals by Danielle Heim. Baby, I know love isn't what I thought it was, 'cause I've never known love like this before. Oh, yeah. Yes, the Felice brothers are actually brothers, but it's not just co-founders Ian and James Felice you hear on the Americana band's latest album. Undress unfurls a rich acoustic tapestry over which the band's politically pointed new songs unfold. The title track rhymes Chain of Collusion with Endless Confusion, with references to Kellyanne Conway, Bank of America, and, quote, conservatives in lobster bibs. Maybe don't wear your Nantucket Reds to their national tour, which is now underway. Singer-songwriter Rhiannon Giddens fronts the Carolina Chocolate Drops, and this week she's releasing her third solo album. There Is No Other is a collaboration with Francesco Turisi, a multi-instrumentalist from Italy, and it has a distinctly cross-Atlantic vibe. It's an intimate collection of songs that draw on a global palette. Here's the aptly titled Slow Burn Stomper, I'm On My Way.
Watching from my window, the curtain coming down. A blue as black as warning, a silence like a sound that rattles at the cages that hold my heart.
Alan Parsons is a true music legend. He came up in the music world as an engineer, helping shape the sound of classic albums like the Beatles' Abbey Road and Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon. Then he took the mic as a singer-songwriter and found critical and commercial success with a string of releases as the Alan Parsons Project, hitting the top five with the 1982 single Eye in the Sky. Now, Parsons is back with a new album called The Secret. He talked with me about his past and present. Let's start right off talking about your new music. The Secret is coming out. It'll be your first album in 15 years, if I'm counting correctly. What brought you back to the studio, and what can fans expect from the new music?
It's a return to the style of the Alan Parsons Project. I knew that the concept was to be based around the art of magic. We just set to work to write as many songs as we could based on the idea of magic, magicians, and the way magicians might think, what their ideals are and stuff like that. Everything actually came together pretty quickly once I got the record deal from Frontiers in Italy. Having some money in the bank to make an album made a big difference.
So even in this streaming era where singles seem to be king, you're still dedicated to the concept of an album around a coherent concept.
Yeah, but believe it or not, I know I may be fighting a losing battle, because we live in a three-minute download world these days, in the world of iTunes and Spotify and so on. But the encouraging thing is that vinyl is undergoing a renaissance. So that's an indicator that people are ready to sit down and listen to 30, 40 minutes of music continuously.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly one of my most treasured pieces of vinyl is an original copy of iRobot.
We released iRobot with impeccable timing at exactly the same time that Star Wars came out. It was literally the same month. Interestingly, there's another connection to iRobot. The last song is going to be featured in a biopic about a young man who was hugely influenced by Star Wars and by Close Encounters and the science fiction movies of the bygone era, as it were, and he worked with Douglas Trumbull, the Star Wars special effects guy, and this movie is featuring in our promo video for the song. It's a song called "I Can't Get There From Here." It's actually the closing song on the album.
Can you name the person who the biopic is about, or is that still under wraps?
His name is Patrick Reed Johnson. That's R-E-A-D. The biopic's called 5/25/77, which is the date of Star Wars.
Okay. So talk about this big picture. I feel like you're one of the rare figures who are just as appreciated for your work behind the scenes, or behind the board, more specifically, working with artists like you've mentioned, and Pink Floyd, the Beatles, Ambrosia, but then your own music as a musician yourself, sort of on stage and in the studio. When you see the increasing attention being paid to people like Giorgio Moroder and to Niles Rogers as a producer and yourself, do you think people are increasingly appreciative of the work being done behind the boards by engineers and producers in the classic rock era?
I think rather more so in the classic rock era, because I think people accept that many records these days can be literally done in a bedroom. So I think engineers were considered to be more important back in the day, and I went through the motions of working my way up from the bottom, and just watching other people work in the studio and stuff.
Well, so let's talk about your live shows. Now I understand you didn't really play with Alan Parsons Project really right up until 1990, and now you've really jumped into it with both feet. Live albums, orchestras, you're in the middle of a tour right now. It seems like you've really embraced live performance now.
Oh yes, and obviously we're working a little harder than we might normally do because of the album, and we want to give the album the very best chance and promote it as much as we can.
Well, what would you say people can expect from the show you have on the road right now?
Well, we are, of course, playing the hits, as always. I always joke that if we didn't play Eye on the Sky, they would go to the box office and ask for their money back. But it's essentially a hit show. Three or four songs from the new album, and the new album material seems to be very well received. And there's a possibility, because of the magic concept of the record, that we might incorporate some magic illusion in the show.
Oh, that's exciting.
Maybe I'm going to disappear or something. I don't know. We'll see.
Was there a moment when things really clicked for you, either in your career as an engineer or starting to work with Pink Floyd in particular, where you just sort of nailed one moment, you know, and something came together and just sounded perfect, and you're like, I think this is going to work?
I think that happened countless times. I mean, that's the beauty of the music business. You instinctively know when something's right, and you seize the moment. You know, it's a wonderful experience to really know that you've created something with greatness. You know,
cool. Well, thanks very much for taking time to talk with me. Congratulations on the new music and tour and the new studio.
Thank you very much. Show me.
And finally, this week's viral clip. And really this week, there's just one choice. You may have heard, there's a new Taylor Swift song with a video that's epic because, as BuzzFeed puts it, Taylor Swift is extra AF. The song is called Me, and it's a collaboration with Brendan Urie, as in Brendan Urie of Panic at the Disco, as the song credit reminds you, in case you didn't know. The video is a color-splashed fantasia that pays tribute to classic movie musicals, from The Wizard of Oz to Mary Poppins. But if you're a Swiftie, that's just scratching the surface. BuzzFeed cataloged a lot of the video's Easter eggs, noting the Dixie Chicks portrait, in tribute to Swift's long-standing admiration, the third cat she receives in the video, because she just got a third cat IRL, and the Christmas tree, because she grew up on a Christmas tree farm. Then on top of that, there are the references to her forthcoming, yet-to-be-officially-announced album. She says the title is hidden in there somewhere, but the opening sequence with a snake that transforms into butterflies seems to be the direction she's taking with the new record's iconography. When will it be released? Maybe August 30th, because a clock in the video is set to 8:30. Reading too much into it? Oh no, not this one. BuzzFeed even caught specific visual references to previous Swift videos, and you unlock them by freeze-framing the videos at the exact same timestamps. Pause the Delicate video at 3 minutes and 32 seconds, and then pause the Me video at the same moment, and you'll see how it works. The song's lyrical theme is nothing new, but it's still true. There's definitely no other like Nashville's pop queen. I promise that you'll never find another like me. I know that I'm a handful, baby. I know I never think before I jump. And that's this week's music news. Thanks to Alan Parsons for talking with me. The song of his you heard is Miracle, featuring Jason Mraz. I'm Jay Gabler. Our producer today is Anna Wiggle. We'll be back next week with another jam-packed episode with music news, music history, new releases, a viral clip, an interview, who knows? Let us know what you think about the new format. Find the current music news on Facebook. Have a great week, y'all.